As I prepared to start my 10th program year with you folks here at Woodland Hills Community Church, I spent a good deal of time this past summer thinking about ways we could strengthen our ministry here together. And one of the things I thought a lot about in particular was how we could deepen your experience of Sunday morning worship. And by late July, I had a plan. I would institute a Monday night Bible study that would give folks the opportunity to look at the scriptures for the following Sunday. Not only would that study allow individuals a chance to prepare their hearts for worship 6 days later, but it would also allow them to raise critical questions in our time together that could inform my preaching. Talk about a win-win situation, huh? Well, this last Monday night, we had our first meeting, and immediately that new Bible study paid dividends. For if I had preached the sermon I intended, I would have focused our time together on something called Christology, or how to answer the question Jesus raised in this morning's reading: who do you say I am? But the attendees at the Bible study took me in another direction. For in unpacking the answer that Peter gave in response to Jesus' question, when he said, "You are the Christ, the Messiah," Jesus said something rather provocative. He said, "Don't run from suffering, embrace it." Embrace suffering? The attendees ask. I can see maybe enduring suffering or get through it, but embrace it? How on earth can you do that? So that has become our question this morning. Listen carefully to Jesus' words to Peter and all of his other followers across the ages, and then let's come back together and see what we can do with that question. Mark chapter 8, verses 27 through 38 is read from the Message. Jesus and his disciples headed out for the villages around Caesarea Philippi. As they walked, he asked, "Who do people say that I am?" "Some say John the Baptizer," they said. "Others, Elijah. Still others say one of the prophets." Jesus then asked, "And you? What are you saying about me? Who am I?" Peter gave the answer, "You are the Christ, the Messiah." Jesus warned them to keep it quiet, not to breathe a word of it to anyone. And he then began explaining things to them. "It is necessary that the Son of Man proceed to an ordeal of suffering, be tried and found guilty by the elders, high priests, and religion scholars, be killed, and after 3 days rise up alive." He said this simply and clearly so they couldn't miss it. But Peter grabbed him in protest. Turning and seeing his disciples wavering, wondering what to believe, Jesus confronted Peter. "Peter, get out of my way. Satan, get lost. You have no idea how God works." Calling the crowd to join his disciples, he said, "Anyone who intends to come with me has to let me lead. You're not in the driver's seat. I am. Don't run from suffering. Embrace it. Follow me, and I'll show you how. Self-help is no help at all. Self-sacrifice is the way, my way, to saving yourself, your true self. What good would it do to get everything you want and lose you, the real you? What could you ever trade your soul for? If any of you are embarrassed over me and the way I'm leading you when you get around your fickle and unfocused friends, know that you'll be an even greater embarrassment to the Son of Man when he arrives in all the splendor of God, his Father, with an army of the holy angels." Thus ends the reading. So, have you figured out how to embrace suffering? As I wrestled with that question this past week, I found the words of a woman named Elizabeth Johnson helpful. For in unpacking Jesus' teaching on suffering and discipleship, Elizabeth began by making a helpful point. It is important to be clear. She began about what Jesus means by taking up the cross. He's not talking about the suffering that is simply part of life in a broken world, everything from annoying neighbors to serious illness to disasters. Neither is he telling us to seek out suffering or martyrdom. Jesus himself did not seek it, but he foresaw that it would be the inevitable outcome of his mission. Okay, Elizabeth, I thought. The suffering that we're called to embrace doesn't mean the day-to-day annoyances. And it doesn't mean that we have to seek it out, like putting our hand on a red-hot burner. So what then is this suffering we're called to embrace? She continued, taking up our cross means being willing to suffer the consequences of following Jesus faithfully, whatever those consequences might be. It means putting Jesus' priorities and purposes ahead of your own comfort and security. It means being willing to lose our lives by spending them for others, using our time, resources, gifts, and energy so that others might experience God's love made known in Jesus Christ. Elizabeth's words helped some. It helped me understand that the suffering we're called to doesn't mean embracing the little stuff, like being stuck in a long line at the grocery store. Nor does it mean that you gotta seek it out. But what would it look like to lead a life led by Jesus' priorities and purposes, and not our own? I wondered that a lot. And then I stumbled upon the story of one person who helped me answer that burning question, a man by the name of Nate Boyer. Let me tell you a little bit about this Nate Boyer. Nate was born about 6 hours away from us in a little place called El Cerrito 37 years ago. Nate's father was a veterinarian and his mother an environmental engineer. And while his parents were people who had clear goals in mind for their lives, Nate was not. In fact, following his graduation from high school, he drifted from one job to another. He spent some time after graduating from high school working as a deckhand on a sport fishing boat in San Diego. He then tried to become a firefighter, but dropped out before the training was complete. And this being Southern California, he even tried his hand in acting. But none of those things resonated with his soul at all. Well, when Nate was 23, he stumbled upon a life-changing experience. A buddy convinced him to go to Darfur, where he would work to build camps for refugees from the war there. While there, Nate said, he met countless young Africans who were enamored with America and the opportunities that existed here. So when Nate returned home, what did he do with that experience? He joined the army and found his way into the Green Berets. His experiences in Africa made him appreciate the motto of the Army Special Forces, De Oppresso Liber, which means to free the oppressed. And Nate spent 6 years in the army doing tours in places like Iraq and Afghanistan. When Nate finally got out of the army at 29, once again he needed a sense of direction. So he decided to enroll at the University of Texas in Austin. Ooh, sorry you USC fans out there, where he pursued a degree in physical culture and sports. And during his time there, he decided to do something that he had never done before, play football. He became a walk-on long snapper for the Texas Longhorns, and he even started for that college program for his last 3 years in school. When he finished his degree, Nate attempted to do something few get a chance to do, try out for the NFL. And he was signed as an undrafted free agent by the Seattle Seahawks. Sadly, after playing in just one preseason game in 2015, where he recorded just one tackle, Nate was cut. Okay, Pastor Craig. What does all of this stuff about Nate Boyer have to do with today's scripture and what it means to embrace suffering? Well, about a year after the former Green Berets professional football career was cut short, he was watching a preseason game of one of his favorite football teams growing up, the San Francisco 49ers, when he saw the starting quarterback of the 49ers do something completely unexpected. He sat down during the performance of the national anthem. And while that quarterback, back in 2016, a gentleman by the name of Colin Kaepernick, had done it for the previous two preseason games, something this time caught the media's attention. And before you know it, a firestorm of controversy began to swirl. Now, Nate could have stayed off to the sidelines during the controversy and avoided any suffering that might have come his way as a result. But Nate decided, as a former Green Beret and NFL player, that he might have something a little different to offer. So he wrote a letter to Colin Kaepernick, a letter that became a viral sensation. Colin and millions of Americans read that letter, and shortly after he read it, the two men agreed to meet. In their conversation in a hotel lobby, it was clear the two men had very different perspectives on what Colin should do in his efforts to call attention to the way that this country was putting people of color at risk. Nate felt strongly that Colin should stand for the anthem. Colin felt he should sit. So Nate suggested a compromise. What if Colin were to kneel? Kneeling, Nate later explained, has never been in our history really seen as a disrespectful act. I mean, people kneel when knighted. You kneel to propose to your wife, and you take a knee to pray. And soldiers often take a knee in front of a fallen brother's grave to pay respects, he pointed out. In reflecting on the conversation weeks later, Nate went on to write these words. That's how it all started with Colin and I. Neither of us knew that kneeling would be the result of that conversation going in. Colin wanted to sit, and I wanted him to stand. And so we found a common ground on a knee alongside his teammates. I believe that progress and real change happen in this world when you reach across the divide, when you build a bridge, when you swallow your pride, when you open your mind, when you embrace what you don't understand, and ultimately, when you surrender. Problem solved, right? Not quite. In fact, for over the past 22 months, the flames of controversy have continued to be stoked by some. And you know what? Nate would have had every reason to walk away from that argument. For that retired Green Beret and former NFLer had a million other things that he could have been doing. But as a faithful follower of Jesus, Nate hasn't done that. For he knows that participating in this ongoing and unfolding conversation is a part of his call. And recently, he wrote these beautiful words to America that taught me a lot about what Jesus was referring to when he challenged us to embrace suffering. Here's what Nate wrote. So please, no more lines in the sand. Not at home, not among our own people. No more choosing sides. No more for or against. I believe our veterans will be called upon to lead the way in healing the world and solving its problems. Right now, our country needs that more than I can remember. So I'll be here, standing in the radical middle, doing what I can to continue fighting for those who can't fight for themselves. Let's get this thing fixed together you and me. I love you all with all my heart. De oppresso liber. What beautiful sentiments. What beautiful words that show how one person willingly went where Jesus called. First to Darfur, then to Iraq and Afghanistan, then to Seattle, and now into the hearts of his fellow Americans. And he went because he was not seeking fame or fortune, but because he was seeking things that were far more important, healing and hope. And those things are beginning to happen because Nate didn't run from suffering. He embraced it. My hope for each of us, in closing, friends, is that we will all do what Nate did. Use our lives and our life stories in order to follow God's call and be in those difficult places where we too will suffer. Suffer not as martyrs or not as those grappling with low self-esteem, but rather suffer as followers of Christ. Followers who know that only through the path of suffering can we make it out to the other side, to resurrection and rebirth. May we have the wisdom and courage to follow where Jesus leads in our own process of being transformed. Amen.